One. Bounce down to Giannis. Catches on Tice. Hook shot down with a foul.
To game 72.
It is in the bank. It is earning interest. This one is over.
And beyond.
And the magic number for clinching the top seed in the Eastern Conference
the
is down
place
to
be for the big picture on the Bucks. This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Trends, tendencies, and trajectories of your Milwaukee Bucks, as well as all around the NBA.
I think this team is going to be even better than the last couple of years, and those teams are pretty darn good.
Now, here's your hosts, Justin Garcia and Greg Matzik.
You might need to amend that open, Greg Hill. You might have to just tweak the last line there a little bit. Maybe we'll be able to get back to that at the end of the season or toward the end of the season, but right now maybe it just doesn't fit so well. Hello, Justin. You want to start this one? I feel like I'm the bad luck charm. I get home from vacation and the Bucks have a couple clunkers. I'm putting this one on me.
I was just going to see how long I could go silent there and see if you wouldn't think I was here and say, oh, well, I guess it's just me.
I thought it was the emotions just getting swirled up a little bit. We're all speechless at times. It's okay.
Look, I understand why fans are freaking out in that this is nowhere near what we saw the last few years. And, you know, one of the more interesting numbers that's come out or stats that's come out from the Elias Sports Bureau now following tonight's game is the Bucks are the first team in NBA history to lose five in a row immediately following a win streak of five or more by double digits. So as good as they looked in the five games leading up to this and during that win streak, now they've reversed course and they've lost five in a row. I understand that people are going to be apt to panic. But, I mean, as we've tried to convey throughout the season, it is still incredibly early. And the elephant in the room is you still don't have Jrue Holiday. So this is nowhere near the final product of the team you're going to see as the season progresses for a number of reasons, but the biggest one being the guy that you put most of your chips into the front, into the center of the table here in the offseason to bring into town and say, you know what, depth isn't of priority anymore. We're just going to try to build the best starting five we can have, and it's going to be this three-headed monster of Giannis, Chris, and Jrue. Well, he hasn't played during the duration of this five-game losing streak in your last six games overall. So, yeah, it's disappointing that you're losing five in a row, but you can't just not mention that Jrue Holiday hasn't played in these games.
855-616-1620 if you'd like to join us. Greg Hill's producing the program tonight. We might turn him loose a little bit later on. As I was making notes throughout the game, I jotted down a lot of the things that you said. I went back and sort of reviewed what it's looked like without Jrue Holiday, and it started off pretty good with that win over the Nuggets, and then it sort of turned south here. But, you know, as I'm watching that second quarter play out, and this is really where the game turned in my eyes, a 15-point second quarter. I mean, anytime you have a quarter with more turnovers than field goals, the chances of that quarter turning out A-OK are not really that strong. It just felt disorganized, and I'll credit the Raptors for that. I mean, they're a well-coached team. They execute their stuff very well. But it felt like the Raptors were just dictating what was going to happen, right? And here's what we're going to do on defense. Good luck with it. And, you know, with Jrue on the floor, you're probably looking at a counterpunch to what the Raptors are doing. And it felt disorganized. And maybe there were some adjustments that we saw in a better third quarter. Yeah, the look certainly seemed better in the third quarter. Some just didn't go down. But it felt like the Raptors just had control. Like, go ahead, try and do whatever you want. We've got this.
I don't know that it was really anything offensively for the Bucks. The big difference in that third quarter was their defense started to get some stops. And, you know, this was probably the ideal situation to throw Thanasis Adetokounmpo out there in that you saw his defense and what he brings defensively and the energy, and he was the first guy out there trying to give that boost and give that energy. And you know, it's always one of the tough things because there's no way to really quantify the impact that one of these turn the tide and shift the momentum, and this guy just brings the energy and people feed off him. There's no way to really quantify that, but I think we did see that for a burst in the third quarter from Thanasis. The problem was the Bucks still just couldn't sustain that offense against the Raptors, so they were starting to get some more stops, and that's the reason why they knocked this thing down to, in the third quarter, what, 12, I think it was, and 9 at one point in the second half. But you knew you weren't going to stop the Raptors on every possession, that you needed to turn things around offensively, and they just couldn't do that. And, you know, it was the problem, I think, is Drew Holiday still gone. But if we're going to nitpick here, and it is still way too early to get to the fire the coach type of reaction here that I think we're seeing social media flooded with, but if you're going to point something out, it's the Raptors didn't change anything from game one to game two. And I think Bobby Portis said after the game here on Tuesday night that, you know, the benefit of playing this team two games in a row is we can kind of review some of the things that they did, and we can game plan and regroup, and we can atone for that in game two here on Thursday night. And we saw none of that. The Raptors did the exact same things, and the Bucks looked equally confused. And Chris Middleton had an issue with turnovers. The team as a whole had an issue with turnovers, where it's going to get pinned on Chris because that seems to be an easy target when things don't go well. But in that second quarter, it was a disaster for the Bucks for every single player on the floor. They had 6 field goals and 7 turnovers in that quarter, and they scored 15 points, which is not good. It is ridiculously low. But 5 of those 15 came in the final 90 seconds of the quarter. So this was trending towards an all-time bad quarter for the Bucks. That right there was the major issue. They couldn't find their offense all game long. They did momentarily get stops in the third quarter, but it's, you know, you can scheme and game plan and say we're going to figure out how to attack this. And I think Giannis did do a much better job on Tuesday than he did tonight with some of those. But it ultimately boils down to those secondary guys. And if they're not hitting shots, it doesn't matter what you do in terms of making the right read. Your offense is going to stall. And that's what we saw. Where, again, very similar. First half on Tuesday night, you got all this production from the other guys, from Bobby Portis, from Bryn Forbes, from Dante, from Pat Connaughton especially, and it disappeared in the second half. Tonight, you got some of that in the first quarter, and then it totally disappeared for the final three.
855-616-1620. Our guy Dick in Port Washington joining us first out of the chute. Welcome to the program. Greetings, Dick.
Hi. I'm not even going to get into my frustrations with the whole game itself and the lack of stupid passing, stupid fouling, etc. But one of the things I did learn listening to the national broadcast is they made a really good point that, you know, Giannis shouldn't start the play. He should end the play either by scoring or by making a pass. And as much as I've always dumped on Augustine and your shows previously, I think it's time to start him. He's the only point guard we got until Drew comes back. You got to get the ball out of Giannis's hands and have a point guard, and then bring in Bryn for other things later on. But this, something's got to change here.
It's interesting, Dick. I appreciate the phone call. It's been a slow go for DJ Augustine, and I think part of the reason Bryn Forbes is starting is just the offensive punch that DJ's not providing. And really, the numbers weren't terrible tonight, shooting from distance, but it's been a slow go, I think, overall, as Bryn has been a nice piece off the bench. But I think the point is well stated, Justin, in that there's not a lot of point guard depth, and you've got multiple guys that can handle the ball here. And even Drew himself, as we've talked about, not a true point guard, but you certainly feel comfortable with the ball in his hands. You know, that Eric Bledsoe, George Hill combination, if one's out, the other will pick up the slack. I mean, that was somewhat seamless from an offensive perspective. There's just not a lot in that tank. I would not have thought about that because DJ Augustine has been a little bit slow in going, but he is your true point guard, I guess, for better or for worse.
Yeah, I don't know that I would say it's interesting. I mean, DJ Augustine is far removed from the point where he is going to be a starter and leaned on for anything more. I mean, we've seen 20 minutes from him in the absence of Drew Holiday, but that's really stretching it with him. And he's still getting used to some of these changes that I think we talked about last time where, for, you know, as much as I think fans will watch some of the shot profile of DJ Augustine and say, why is he going to the basket and why is he doing this? And I overall based on the production we've seen this season, I don't disagree, but also keep in mind, that is what DJ Augustine has done throughout his career, that the amount of shots he's taken at the rim and in the mid-range this season are both career lows by a wide margin, and the amount of threes in terms of overall volume and percentage of shots he's taken that are coming from three is a career high by a wide margin. He's taken 65% of his shots from three, and his previous high was 57%. So that's a pretty big bump up, and this is a guy that's typically taken about a quarter of his shots at the rim. So he's driving the lane and trying to get layups at the basket, and now you're basically telling him, don't do that. Just hang out behind the three-point line, take threes. And I know that's the ideal setup here for him, but that's seemingly has been a rough adjustment so far for DJ Augustine. So I don't think it even really comes down to who's your point guard and who's running it. You just want shooters that are on the perimeter, because as we've seen, the Bucks aren't the only team doing it. It is becoming positionless basketball, and Brent Forbes is your backup point guard with the way that Bud has used him and lumped guys together. And Brent Forbes has played a multitude of positions throughout his career at Michigan State and with the Spurs, but Brent is that guy, and that's why Brent Forbes has been moved into the starting lineup in the absence of Drew Holiday.
Everybody in here, stat?
I know you all like stats, so let me give you some.
Boss, here's our stat for the day.
You know, and I think what Dick is getting at is just like traditional point guard, right? Drive and kick, find the open man, break down a defense, diagnose what's happening in front of you. You know, Brent is still more of a kind of follow Giannis, find your spot, knock down a three, right? He's not a break down the defense kind of guy like Drew is. And, you know, DJ Augustine might have been in years past, but that was something that Eric Bledsoe did very well. George Hill wasn't much of that, but he sort of did a little bit of it. I think that's more what Dick's getting at, the driving kick, diagnose the defense, and attack.
But my pushback
But I don't know that Augustine's going to give you that either, right?
The problem is, who are you kicking it to? That if your traditional point guard is on the floor with Giannis, who are you kicking the ball to? Because if the goal is to get the ball out of Giannis' hands, well, you're not driving and kicking to Giannis on the perimeter. And if the point guard drives, nobody is going to bail from Giannis near the basket.
I think in that respect, it's Giannis attacking from the wing instead of attacking from up top, maybe finding a different way to get him going. But I like whoever is driving to kick the ball to Bryn Forbes. That's where I like Bryn. I'm going to start with you with stat of the day. My mind is still swirling here. And I feel like we overlooked the stat of the day last week, or last game with Chris. We both missed it, that he had zero assists. Yeah. So I need more time.
I mean, I guess I'll just say five. It's the first time in 4 years, almost 4 years to the day, that they've lost five in a row.
I don't want to pick on Chris. I just like him too much. It's just been two bad games.
Then don't.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go to 39%. It was a field goal disaster. I actually didn't think there were terrible looks, to be honest. I thought there were some open looks that they just missed, shots that you'd take any day with these guys. But good shooters struggling. Dante 2-for-6, Bryn 3-for-7. We've seen those guys do much better. Giannis and Chris a combined 0-for-7 from 3. That's uncharacteristic, especially when you involve Chris in the discussion. So it was a collective thud, I thought. But I didn't think the looks were terrible. But they never got that rhythm early, to where it felt like, okay, then you could take a tougher three and knock it down because you're feeling confident. That level of confidence from distance never developed, really, for anybody tonight.
Yeah, and you missed Drew Holiday in the half court offensively here. And it was one of the things that I think it was Bobby Portis talked about after the game on Tuesday. But, I mean, here was one of the other issues. The Raptors play really fast, and they get in transition. The Raptors and Bucks are number one and two in transition offense in the league in terms of the amount of possessions they get in transition and how often they capitalize there. And what the Raptors do, how they do it, is from their defense. And they create a lot of loose balls and deflections. And we saw that again tonight, not only with the turnovers, but just think of how many times they were reading the passing lane and deflecting some of those passes. And even if it didn't lead to a fast break or turnover, it at least stalled the Bucks' offense, where they had to recombobulate. And then it was just kind of working down the shot clock. And think of how many times, especially in that first half and second quarter, where we saw the ball just kind of move around the perimeter and no real movement towards the basket and nothing attacking. being done.
Passing seemed tough, right? Just a simple pass on the from the wing to the, you know, the top of the circle. It was just, it would get away from Giannis's hands, or it would, you know, bounce, and a Raptor would have his hand kind of in the way, and it was just disjointed, very much disjointed is the best way I can describe that second quarter offense. Tough one for the Bucks tonight, held under 100 points, a rarity, especially on the home floor. Now back-to-back home losses to begin this eight-game stretch at Fiserv Forum. The Oklahoma City Thunder visit Milwaukee tomorrow night. Coming up, we left this guy off of our all-against-the-Bucks team. It's an oversight on our part. We'll tell you about it after this. It's Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Welcome back to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
Here's Forbes, top of the circle. Giannis guarded by Van Vliet this time, but the wall is there in case he gets down the lane, which he does. Tosses out to Connaughton. Pat reversing, it goes, 49-34.
When things were, well, they weren't terribly close at that point. 110-96, the final. The Bucks fall to 16-13 with a loss to the now 14-15 Toronto Raptors. Greg Matzik, Justin Garcia, Greg Hill with you. It's Bucks Talk on ESPN and 620 WTMJ. So both teams were shorthanded tonight. No Kyle Lowry for the Raptors. Jrue Holiday, of course, missing his sixth straight game with the Milwaukee Bucks. Certainly you could say that the Raptors handled it better, the loss of their point guard, than the Bucks did. So enter Norman Powell. So how did we leave this guy off of our all-against-the-Bucks team? Didn't we do that early on this season? All of the guys, like Goran Dragic is in the starting five, or maybe you said he was the sixth man, but guys that always just seem to eat up the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't know if he's got, like, forever hatred or spite that the Bucks wanted to trade him on draft night for Grievous Vasquez. Yes, of course, the Raptors end up getting the better end of that trade, but freaking Norman Powell. You go back to the playoffs a couple years ago. The guy comes up big against the Bucks, typically. And tonight, no different. 29 points. He's the lead scorer for the Raptors, and he's just knocking stuff down from all over the place. 4-7 from 3, 9 of 12 from the field. Add him to the list, Justin. Our all-against-the-Bucks team needs Norman Powell.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems like that with the eyeball test, but the numbers indicate that that is not the case. That Norman Powell averages 12 points a game or 10 points a game against the Bucks in 13 career games. So it does seem like we remember a few moments, but the numbers would say, eh, he's just okay.
It's more than the numbers, all right? Doesn't it just seem like he affects the game more? Or is that just because you have more eyes on him saying, oh, the Bucks could have had that guy? Or remember when they traded that guy?
No, yeah, I think it's that, and that he had I know he was big in the playoffs in – I mean, I think that's where most of it stems from in what I think it was game five. Not in it was game three. Norman Powell was big basically for the second half of that series. So I think that's where most of it stems from.
Giannis entering tonight's game, finding out he's an All-Star for the fifth time. He will be among the starters for the All-Star game. We'll find out reserves here in the next couple of days. So we're still doing this thing, right? Still doing the All-Star game, March 7th, well, still happening?
Well, I mean, I was going to say, have they formally announced it?
Have they announced the starters?
No, the All-Star game. I mean, I know they announced the starters tonight, but have they put out the formal release of, by the way, here's the All-Star game. It's going to be the 7th. It's going to be at this time. It's going to be on TNT. I mean, I think we're still kind of operating under, yeah, we've all known this is happening for a couple of weeks. We'll send out the rest in a couple of days with the details on the whole weekend and the day of Sunday, but here's your All-Stars.
Well, you think they're pulling the plug on this one?
No, I don't think they're pulling the plug. I'm just saying they still have not formally announced the game.
If I had to guess, I would say they're trying to figure out what else is going to accompany that night. I think it's a night. I don't think it's a weekend. I think anything they do is going to be.
It's not the night. Day that they're putting everything. They're doing a slam dunk contest and it's at halftime. So it's just the game that it's not going to be a day full of events or a weekend, because they got to get people into Atlanta and out. And we've already seen, you know, political leaders in Atlanta saying, don't come here. we don't want parties here. We don't want congregating. We right. don't want people coming into Atlanta and hanging out. Yeah, the players are coming here, but that doesn't mean you should come here too.
You know, the real crime in this whole thing is that we don't get to see Elliot Sox Perry, Dan Marley, and Diana Taurasi in that skills competition where somebody has to hit a half-court shot at the end. I think they do. I think it's more of a – I don't know if it's televised anymore. It's maybe part of a webcast. But that is the real crime in this whole thing.
That used to be the best event. Yeah, that used to be. There was a stretch where that was the best – because the slam dunk contest has been gone for years. So there was a stretch where it was the three-point shootout, and then even then they tweaked it too much, and it got to be like, okay. But then it was that. It was the – I don't remember what they even called it, but that's what you wanted to watch every year because it always came down to like – Hakeem Olajuwon or Robert Horry hitting a half-court three for the win.
Right. You know, and it's too bad because, you know, I hope they bring that back because that would be a great spot for Marc Gasol to come back and put on a tank top again. What does he weigh, Greg Hill? What is it, 285?
No, he's in the 250 range, but still.
Yeah, I mean, he's putting on a tank top every night, Greg.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it fits him well, too. It hugs. Sure, it's not painted on. Feels like it's painted on. Anyways, All-Star night, whatever, it's coming. I'm wondering if this is the – if you're going to be snubbed from an All-Star game, I'm wondering if this is the year that All-Stars will feel like, I'm borderline, man. I'm cool if it doesn't happen for me this year. I remember Brandon Jennings used to get a little salty that he didn't make the All-Star team. I don't know that he ever really deserved to, but I remember him being salty about it. This might be one of those years where maybe you don't mind being snubbed so much, especially if you're a veteran, been there and done that.
Yeah, I mean, number one, just the overall tone that we've heard from most of the players, and then factor in what the travel is, too, of, you know what, I don't want to have to go to Atlanta, fly in there Sunday or Saturday afternoon, then you quarantine and you're allowed to bring family, but you and your family are quarantined and you're getting tested and everybody in your party has to get tested both days, go through all the protocols the league has, play this game, then get on a plane, leave immediately after the game. When I could just go home or I could just go to Mexico and hang out for 5 days.
855-616-1620 if you'd like to join us here. Bucks fall to the Toronto Raptors 110-96. Not off to a good start here on the homestand. Bucks were 9-2 at Fiserv Forum entering this homestand. Now 9-4 after back-to-back losses. We've got Mark and Fond du Lac joining us on the line. Mark, you're on Bucks Talk.
Good evening, fellas. Few things. When you lose the first of the two games to Toronto and you come back and you just aren't even competitive in the second game to an average team, that's mainly effort. You can look in a lot of areas, but that's what it comes down to there. That's I guess they're becoming a typical NBA team that at times just goes through the motions and at times tries. My question would be, I don't think he's a difference maker, but at any point will DJ Wilson ever see the court for this team in a meaningful minute? I don't know what his weaknesses are. I don't see every game, and I don't know. But maybe you guys can tell me why he can't seem to ever get on the court. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call. You're tighter to this team than I am, but this is something we talked about prior to the season, that just when he thought he was coming into his zone, he ends up either in the doghouse or maybe – he's an asset that's being shopped at this point. I don't know, but he's not seeing the floor much.
I don't think he's being shopped. I mean, especially when you look at the contract and the fact that he's going to be a restricted free agent this offseason, that I there's no value there. So, I think it's just we've seen what DJ Wilson is, and his best usage is a limited usage big that can switch and move around defensively there, but I think one of the things that held DJ back through the years is when you had some of the younger guys on the team around the same time, when you had DJ there and Dante and when Sterling Brown was still here, and those guys were still kind of a part of that second unit that were Dante out of the mix, but you know Sterling Brown and DJ were still kind of fighting for minutes and trying to find a spot in that rotation. Dante and Sterling Brown were both very aggressive in the minutes that they had on the floor, and DJ just seemed to play, I don't mean this to sound negative, but seemed to be very passive and play within the system, which is something that is instilled in them from their coach. And you don't want to be a guy that's just out there hunting shots in the limited minutes you have. But I do think that kind of hurt him because, you know, Sterling and Dante would both play within the system, but were out there to get shots as well. So when those opportunities came, they were making the most of them. DJ just doesn't seem to do that. And offensively, I don't know that DJ has that type of skill set that you can consistently throw him out there and say, okay, this guy isn't going to hurt us. That it's kind of going to be like some of the things we've started to see with Bobby Portis and Brook Lopez that we saw brought up again tonight, where this was another game. This is what, two out of the last three games where Brook Lopez does not finish the game. And it's kind of an offense-defense trade-off, and that's the problem with DJ is, at this point, he's more of a defensive guy, but he's not overly sized where he's basically a four. You can throw him out there against some fives, and he has that switching ability, but I wouldn't say DJ is a great defender. He's just the guy you can get by with, and the offense is, you know, I think what we're going to see from DJ, his ceiling is probably somewhere around 6 points a night at best.
Yeah, he's an effort guy on defense. I guess that's what I see because I've seen him in the switch game. I've seen him, you know, in rotations, cover up and pick up an open man. He's got long strides. It's not a lack of effort. There's nothing with that. But, you know, you mentioned the Lopez-Bobby Portis thing. So, you know, there was a stretch in this game. I think the Raptors were 1-for-1 from three, and it was, you know, maybe halfway through the first quarter, and then they caught fire. And then the numbers blew up really in that second quarter as they distanced themselves from the Bucks. And, you know, Lopez was on the floor quite a bit during that stretch. That is the trade-off, right? So if Lopez goes off the floor, you kind of lack that rim protection that he so often brings to the table. So you replace him with Bobby Portis. All right, well, now you're better maybe defending the three-point line, but your rim protection is going to suffer a little bit. Like that's the trade-off. You almost have to figure out, what do you do here? What's your decision based upon how the other team is attacking? And, you know, offense was struggling tonight. Defensive three-point line was an issue for a little while in this game. It begged for Bobby Portis to be in, but too much to overcome, I guess, in that second quarter. But Lopez being played off the floor, how big of a problem is that long term?
Well, I think the problem that the Bucks had tonight was Bobby Portis didn't really do much in the minutes that he was out there. I mean, his only 2 points came in the final few minutes of the game. So this was one of those weird games where Bobby Portis didn't really make an impact on the glass and didn't have one offensively either. And I think it's now 19 games that we've gone since Bobby Portis has recorded a double-double, where he started the season on 4 out of 9 games that he was recording a double-double, and we were pointing to, man, he only had 5 all of last year, and this guy's been a double-double machine. He's been scoring, but we haven't seen that quite as much. And I think part of that is Giannis's rebounding has gone up, and Giannis's rebounding was down early in the season, and we all kind of wondered, you know, why is Giannis's numbers down here? And I think it's pretty clear now with that and with what we're seeing from Bobby that it was the Bobby Portis effect that was impacting that. But, you know, I think the tough part about tonight's game was what you heard asked of Bud there in the post game, and that Nick Nurse said after the game that this was our strategy, and he said it Tuesday as well, that we know how they defend the rim, we know how this defense is constructed for the majority of the time. And this was another game where we saw the Bucks switch quite a bit that we should touch on in a second. But the Raptors' plan was, let's get into the paint, and let's force that defense to collapse and make it look like we're going to be challenging them and then kick it out to the shooters. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's a catch-22 where if you put Brook Lopez out there to prevent that, the Raptors aren't even trying to do that, and then Brook Lopez is not an asset to have on the perimeter and trying to switch there. That's where you would more like to go to Bobby Portis, and that's kind of the elephant in the room. And the problem here with some of the defensive issues we've seen from this team is Brook Lopez is great at defending the rim. And last year what he did, that was one of the best defensive seasons we've seen from a big man. It's right up there with guys like Rudy Gobert. But we're seeing more and more teams move away from even challenging you at the rim or points in the paint even. That this is becoming more and more of a three-point league, and we're starting to see more teams incorporate mid-range shots again too. So in those areas, especially with Brook, and especially if you're running a drop defense, it's going to be tough to put him in the right matchup.
Bucks fall 110-96 tonight, shooting just 29%, just a little under 29%, as a matter of fact, from three. So five straight losses, never before seen in the Mike Budenholzer era. Still, the Bucks are one of a very small amount of teams above 500 in the NBA's Eastern Conference. 855-616-1620 if you'd like to join us. Bucks Talk continues after this.
You're listening to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. You're listening to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
Giannis driving down the lane right there to finesse, slam it. Younger brother to older brother. Bucks make it a 12-point game. It's 80-68.
23-12 and 8 for Giannis Antetokounmpo. Chris Middleton with 13. All five starters for the Bucks score in double figures, but overall a dismal shooting night for the Bucks. Just under 40% from the field, 29% from three, and for those keeping score at home, 69% from the line. 110-96 the final. Milwaukee falls to the Toronto Raptors. Season low, 15 points second quarter, doing the Bucks in. Let's see, 7 turnovers in that quarter and 6 field goals. Not a good quarter for the Milwaukee Bucks. Too much to overcome in tonight's game.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
So after a tough loss, what better way to lift the spirits than talking politics, right? No, I'm kidding. But we did have an announcement earlier in the week that Bucks executive Alex Lazary is announcing his bid to run for U.S. Senate here in Wisconsin in 2022. That got me thinking about what sort of platform our favorite NBA names and personalities would run on. And the key to any good campaign is a good political promise and slogan. So I will be giving you both a political promise, and you will have to guess which player will be running under said promise. So here we go. just to warm it up. The first campaign promise. I vow to be transparent and to tell you everything that is going on in the world, especially as it is happening right in front of you. I promise to tell you nothing that you don't already know, to point out the obvious and the like. You don't believe me? Just check my Twitter account when I once tweeted out, the only way San Antonio or Miami doesn't win the championship is if neither team makes the finals. My campaign slogan, we may be talking about next year, but I'm not going to be here. Which player, or former player in this instance, is running under this campaign?
Okay, so this is league-wide. This is not just the Bucks.
Yes, oh, this is league-wide.
Yeah, well, that threw me for a loop. I was trying to associate which league-wide. One of the Bucks was league-wide. Can you repeat the question?
So, he points out very obvious things. There's no
I mean,
sort of mystery. Justin, go ahead. Take it away if you even know the answer.
I'll go with Bucks great Irvin Johnson.
Indeed, it is. Always
wow,
for those
that's a great poll.
Innocuous tweets. Okay, maybe that wasn't the warm-up one. We'll see where we go. I think you guys will get this next one. I promise to my constituents that we will walk together hand-in-hand all the way to the end of the earth and then turn around because we don't want to fall off the edge. I will tell you, my new constituents, that this is the first time in my career that I can look down and say that, expletive, can make that shot too. Although my old constituents are still winning championships without me. My campaign slogan is a real quote, there is not one real picture of Earth. Which player is running under this campaign promise?
I don't know who his running mate is, but that would be Kyrie, correct?
Kyrie Irving is correct.
Okay.
This next one.
We used to play a game, Greg, back in the days of Sports Central where Justin would go through a litany of clues as we used to try and guess players from different NFL teams. And if we were stumped, at the end, he would just, you know, take the first initial of the last name and apply it to the first name, and then take the first initial of the first name and apply it to the last name to just, you know, kind of give us a stronger clue if we were feeling like we were at wit's end and not knowing where to go with our answers.
Well, this player's name rhymes with Fryn Borbs.
Okay. Right. Now I know that. I like on following in the footsteps, and I know how to bail you guys out.
It was always later in the clue pile. Like it wasn't like number one or two. It was down the road. Like it was well after this player played at, you know, New Mexico State.
If you need a lifeline, now I know how to speak your language so we can get on with this. So the next one, I promise to give it to you straight, even though I may cross you up pretty good. If I win the office, the first rule I will change is my crossovers wouldn't be called a carry as they would be today, but not when I played. My campaign slogan, we talk about practice, not a game, not a game, not a game, but practice. Which player is running under this campaign promise?
I thought you were going somewhere else when you mentioned the crossover, and I was really concerned about some of the comments about life in general that this player has made. And when you said, well, it would be similar to something he said here, I was going to say, Greg, can we mention this? But I guess it's not Tim Hardaway, and instead it is Allen Iverson.
Yeah, I would not.
Okay, so we've got a little Teams chat window set up. Justin, I don't know if you can see it, but I wrote down Tim Hardaway, Allen Iverson. Yes. So I had the exact same thought process you did.
That's awesome.
Hey, crossover. You apply a term to a player. Crossover.
Yeah, the killer
crossover. I went to Tim Hardaway first.
That's true. See? Okay, so the wheels are turning. Unfortunately, this is the last one as well as this game is going. This next and final campaign promise, I promise to run on any platform that I can fit on, which is not many. When I get to office, I will drive there in my Kia, ensure that you're all insured by the general, mend your pains and aches with some Icy Hot, and wash it all down with my personal sodas with my face on them. Sidebar, I don't even think they make these sodas anymore.
Wow, he's a Kia guy?
I could be wrong. My campaign slogan, Google me, Chuck, or barbecue chicken. Which player is running under this campaign promise?
Now, when you said he wouldn't fit in the car, I thought you were going with Marc Gasol, but you had the Kia reference. I went to Blake Griffin, and then ultimately I'm going to settle on Shaq.
On Shaq, and that would be correct.
Okay, so true story. So I have worked at WTMJ Radio since 2001, so we're knocking on the door of 20 years. So I saw Michael's last game at the old Bradley Center as a member of the Wizards. I was in the locker room in the days of Irvin Johnson, the old Irvin Johnson from New Orleans, not Magic, and so on. So I've seen a variety of players and been in and out of the Packers locker room. It's not even close. Shaq is the largest human being I have ever been within 15 feet of. Like, that, there's not even a close second. He is a massive, massive human being. Like, you have, like, the tunnels are incredibly wide. You have to move to the side so he can walk through the tunnel. Like, he's got a presence about him that's larger than his actual stature, which is insanely large. You've never seen anybody as big as Shaq.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who, because, I mean, the issue is most of my experience around players is primarily MLB and NBA. And I mean, in the last few years here with doing the Bucks post game, I haven't been in the actual locker room since the Bradley Center. So I believe it was the second to last year of the Bradley Center is the last time I was actually in locker rooms for the post game scrums. But I want to say I was there, and it had to have been while he was. Oh, geez. Was it the Spurs? Or it might have been when he was with the Clippers. I was there for one of the Boban games that he was in town. And that was, I mean, we talked about it last time that Boban was here. But that was the largest human I've ever seen or been around.
He's got some Andre the Giant qualities to him, doesn't he?
A lot.
It's like Andre Light.
Andre the Giant, some George Mirasan.
Right, yeah, there you go. George Mirasan is probably better. No, Boban is enormous. Like, Julius Peppers is probably the biggest man I've ever seen in an NFL locker room. Like, he's just you have to see him. But, like, he is just massive. He's thick. He dwarfs anybody else. But put him next to Shaq, and all of a sudden Peppers look small. That's insane to me.
Who is the and you don't want to sound jaded or cynical, but we've been around enough of these figures that it starts to wear off, where it's just your job and you kind of take it for granted. But who is the most starstruck you have been around? Where this guy, it's the first time maybe that you've been around a big-time athlete, and I was the most starstruck when I saw this guy and we were in the same room.
It was Jordan for me.
Okay, yeah.
Like, it was at the Bradley Center. This was after his game, final game at the BC, as a member of the Wizards. And there was you didn't talk to Michael in the locker room. He would come out,
yep.
And there was I mean, none of the media was in the Bucks locker room after that game.
It was the Kobe setup.
Yes, exactly. Only they brought Kobe to in like a room where he could stand in front of a microphone, so media was sort of in front of him. This was like an all-out scrum. And, you know, I was pretty young, and I'm not small, so I weaseled my – and I'm radio, so I need to get my microphone pretty close.
Yeah.
So there I was right in front of Michael Jordan, like I'm talking a foot and a half, like it, with people crowding in around me. So, but Tiger's an interesting one because for as much as we cover Justin, we don't often cover golf. So that adds another element to like, whoa, this is not every day.
It was almost the exact same thing for me. And it might have no, that was probably a year later than Jordan's. So I was an intern at WTMJ, and I was covering the PGA Championship, and I was up there all week. And it was one of the practice rounds. I believe it was the It was the Wednesday round. And I was leaving the media tent. And Tiger, unbeknownst to me, was just finishing his round, and there was no assigned times of the players will come here. They didn't do that until the actual tournament started, and they had like a media room set up for that. So I'm leaving, and I'm walking out to go like get something to drink or something, and here comes Tiger Woods off the green just finishing his practice round and just holds an impromptu, all right, there's like five reporters around. I'll take a couple of questions here, and then I'm moving on. And I was literally the first guy there just standing there like, all right, I guess. And then like the fear goes through your mind of, I was literally the only guy for a second, and he could kind of see like, it looks like this is media. So he just kind of stopped, and it's just me where you're like, oh, God, please, somebody else show up. Like, it can't be just me and Tiger Woods, and I'm the only one that... So, how did you hit him today?
Nice putt.
You got a good video game.
I saw it. Sweet. It does happen from time to time. I'm telling you what, Hank Aaron was another one for me, and starstruck's probably not even a strong enough term. Because you knew you were in the presence of something just incredibly great. We'll wrap up Bucks Talk coming up on the other side. 110-96, the final tonight. No time to rest on this one. The Bucks will be back at it again tomorrow against an Oklahoma City Thunder team that handed the Bucks one of their five consecutive losses. So plenty to fight back here for on this 8-game homestand for the Bucks. We wrap it up after this on ESPN and 620 WTMJ.
Stick around. Bucks Talk continues next. Presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. This is Bucks Talk. Presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
Portis tips the rebound. Augustine for his third three. Bango! DJ Augustine, 93-82. Bucks have hit eight threes in the game. DJ with three.
Yeah, three-pointers for DJ Augustine, but as a team, the Bucks shoot just 29.4% from distance in a 14-point loss to the Toronto Raptors. One of just three games on the schedule tonight, the Miami Heat with a commanding lead over the Sacramento Kings. It's 102-84, that game being played in Sacramento. And Miami trying to do what Toronto's doing here, inch their way back in. Toronto occupying one of the final playoff spots currently in the Eastern Conference. Miami hoping to launch herself into that conversation. Currently 11-17. The Kings 12-15. Jimmy Butler with a triple-double watch here. 13 points, 9 boards, 12 assists with 8:44 left to go in the fourth quarter. He may not need to play all that much to secure a win. And billed as the marquee game of the night here, Justin, in Los Angeles, the Nets with a 20-point lead over the Lakers, 87-67, about 3 minutes left to go in the third. You know, similar to what we saw in Milwaukee tonight with a terrible second quarter for the Bucks. You know, the Lakers with just 14 points with 3 minutes left to go in the third quarter. So it didn't really get off to a great start. The Nets, looking at the scoreboard anyway, started hot, stayed hot. One of the nuggets from tonight's game is that LeBron has eclipsed the 35,000-point mark in his career. But so much for that being the marquee game of the night. Really, just three kind of clunkers tonight in the NBA on a relatively light night in the association.
Yeah, I mean, it's still the marquee game. It's just we have not had great games tonight, and that seemingly has been the trend with these Thursdays where TNT has the exclusive window, and we just see two or three games on Thursday nights. That it feels like this year more than others, those games have not been good.
Back to LeBron, though. So, eclipsing the 35,000-point mark, and that's incredible, and he's going to keep inching his way up that list. 25 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists at the age of 37. He's playing more minutes than I recall him playing in the last several years. The Lakers are an outstanding team, tonight notwithstanding. 22-7, chasing just the Jazz. I think if I'm looking at it, I'm still a believer in the Lakers, and that what the Jazz are right now is a great story, but they've got to prove they can beat a team like the Lakers, a LeBron-led team in Los Angeles. Without Anthony Davis, it's going to look a little different, and I don't think tonight's an example of what it's going to be like for the Lakers without AD, but certainly that's a difference-making talent not available. But overall, can you put into perspective what LeBron is doing here at the age of 37? I never want to take for granted somebody this great. Whether I like what he does on the floor and then he complains, whatever, just wipe it all aside. Have your Jordan LeBron debate all you want. I see a dude doing at 37 what I've never seen anybody do, and I don't think it should be taken for granted. This dude amazes me every freaking year I watch him play.
Yeah, I think, you know, we don't have to, and we don't have time to have the greatest of all time discussion, but it's not even up for debate that LeBron is the greatest of this generation. And I mean, for as talented as of a run as we've seen from this league, where you think about, they had some real issues in the early 2000s and really up until around 2010, that it wasn't an overly talented league. There were certainly some issues with it there. And then LeBron comes in, and that's when Kobe was really peaking as well. And the league started to tick upward again. You know, you think back to, I think the only guys I can really think of doing it, what LeBron is doing, at least close to that level this late in their careers, it's probably just Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But even then, if you compare the numbers, Kareem was okay from 37 to 41. I mean, that last season I think we'd take out of the mix, but Kareem was okay. LeBron is still the best player in his sport at this age, and he's just, you know, figured out how to take care of his body, how to really get the most out of his minutes, and how to really game the system here with his regular season minutes and knowing, okay, here's what I need to do to be ready for the postseason, and that's what he does.
He leads the team in points. He leads the team in assists per game, leads the team in defensive rebounds, practically tied overall with Anthony Davis in terms of rebounds, a steal a game, blocks, right? He's still stat stuffing at an elite level.
The thing that stands out to me the most about LeBron, and I guess it's kind of similar to Michael Jordan, and we saw it certainly during the Last Dance documentary where they highlighted some of this, is think about the different phases of LeBron's career as well, where he entered the league and he was the phenom, and we thought about LeBron the dunker, and he was this super athletic guy of, holy cow, can you believe this kid is only 18 years old? And then it moved on to LeBron in Miami, and we think about the conversations of LeBron can't shoot, and that was really a big issue. Then he gets to Miami, and it was LeBron the facilitator. And then I think it was his second year in Miami where he had that season where he was the most efficient player, close to the most efficient player in the history of the sport. He was shooting over 60% from the floor for an extended period of that season, that he's just been like a chameleon, where the last, what, two-thirds of his career, he has just completely reshaped everything he's done. He's added the post as well. He's added a jump shot, where he went from just being this phenom and this freak athlete to every year or few years, he was adding something to his game.
The number one overall pick from the 2003 draft. Congrats to LeBron for eclipsing the 35,000-point mark. We will be back again tomorrow night following the Bucks matchup with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Stay tuned for Bucks Talk. Hopefully the Bucks can snap a five-game losing streak. Join me on the air at 6 o'clock with Bucks Shootaround. Justin Garcia will be in as part of the network pregame. And then, of course, it's the Bucks and Oklahoma City Thunder. So a full night of Bucks basketball tomorrow on WTMJ, and join us on ESPN as well. Have a great night. You've been listening to Bucks Talk.